Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. I'm Grant Reher. The race for Congress in New York's 22nd District features a rematch between the Democratic incumbent Anthony Brandisi and his Republican challenger and former Congresswoman Claudia Tenney. The race in 2018 was razor close and is very competitive again this year. Joining me today on the program is Ms. Tenney. The 22nd Congressional District covers all of Madison, Oneida, Cortland, and Shenango counties, and portions of Oswego, Broome, Herkimer, and Tioga counties. Note that I hope to have Congressman Brandisi on the show at a later date, but for now, it's Ms. Tenney's turn. Ms. Tenney, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. Great to be on again, Grant. It's been a few years.
Well, yes, and we're glad to have you back on. So let me just start with really the essence of your campaign this time around. I mean, if you could just briefly tell us, what's the core of your case against reelecting Congressman Brandisi?
Yeah, thank you so much. I decided to run again when I realized that there were so many good things that happened and that I was able to accomplish in the 115th Congress where I served in 2017, 2018. And I felt like these things weren't happening and our community was not getting the relief that it needed. And I was concerned that the great relief we brought was going to be jeopardized. And I decided to run again. And I felt also that I've always been an outsider and an independent. And I've had so much money spent against me that to distort and sort of create a cartoon image of me, I really wanted people to know that at my core, what I really am is a compassionate advocate. I'm trained as a lawyer. I was a partner in a law firm. I ran our family newspaper. So yeah, I was in the media. And then I, you know, have spent a little bit of time in politics. I was elected to the state assembly for 6 years where I served at the same time as Congressman Brandisi, and then decided to run for Congress. Interestingly enough, one of the main reasons was I just felt that if I could get into the majority and really bring resources to our community in an economy that was very weak, it would be something we could really accomplish. But also, I'm a small business owner in the region. My family business was started in 1946 by my grandfather. We sold the newspaper division where I was the publisher back in 2004, but we retained our printing division, which we do a lot of packaging and a lot of paperboard packaging. And I was concerned about our ability to continue to run our business with a lot of the policies coming from New York from Albany, and thought we could get a breather from the federal side. So it was very, you know, it was very much about trying to help our community. I have, you know, either through our newspaper, through our family business, you know, we've given so much to our community, whether it's, you know, literally giving donations to charitable organizations, providing jobs, millions in taxes that we pay, also providing, you know, a lot of free space in the newspaper. I was committed to all my causes, of course, just about every not-for-profit fire department, everyone that needed a free space to advertise an event, a charitable event, could get space in our paper. So I feel like those things that I, you know, the compassion that I've always brought to whatever I do, I wanted to bring that to Congress because I could see a lot of those things weren't being addressed, and particularly on the small business side. And I think people forget, you know, there's a vilification of small businesses and businesses in general in our communities, unfortunately. And that I thought it'd be interesting to note that in our communities, I think it's something like 98% of the people in our community work in a business of 100 workers or less. And our small business is much smaller than that. So I just wanted to try to find some relief from them, from the one-size-fits-all solution that seems to come from Albany and also in Washington.
So you mentioned the things that you felt like you were able to accomplish in your previous term. Tell me, looking back at that term, what do you regard as your single most important accomplishment?
I would have to say the tax cuts for a number of reasons. We were able to bring tax cuts to middle and lower income taxpayers and also to small businesses where they could, for the first time, get a chance to rebuild, reinvest their businesses that have, many of them have been ravaged. And we've lost so many iconic businesses in our community. coming from upstate New York, I mean, I recently toured Revere Copper, which was started by Paul Revere in 1801. Mm. And it's considered one of the longest continuously running basic manufacturing companies in the United States. They're still there, but they're struggling. So much of their business, their copper work that they do has gone to China and gone to Asia. And they're we see this sort of rust belt in upstate New York. And that was one of the reasons I tour small businesses all the time. I mean, it got to the point where I would go to small businesses and people would just come out of their building thanking me for the tax cuts for these small businesses. And I know my opponent likes to cast this as somehow the big businesses are there. And I'm concerned about the advantages that a big business will get. But I find it really interesting that, you know, one of the aspects of the tax cuts that nobody talks about is that so much of our business, a great little business like Oneida Limited, was a big business, all gone to China, Asia, you know, other, not here anymore, jobs lost, the displacement of workers that once held these jobs, that a lot of our of American companies were holding their money to the tune of trillions in overseas accounts. And something in the tax cuts that never really gets talked about is that there was an incentive for those businesses to bring that money back and reinvest in the United States, reinvest in jobs, and also they had to pay a big amount to the U.S. Treasury. And so far, it's been over $1 trillion back into the U.S. Treasury, along with thousands of jobs being brought back. And a perfect example of that is Corning. Corning, which was founded not in my district, but just outside in Corning, New York, doing the Gorilla Shield and a lot of, you know, the Gorilla Glass that's on all of our iPhones and, you know, doing great work, but they've brought thousands of jobs back. And they, you know, told me, we didn't like paying $1 billion to the U.S. Treasury, but in the long run, it's going to be worth it. And we're going to be back in America providing jobs. Another thing that I really was very strong, I wrote a lot of articles before I was even in office, was on trying to hold China accountable. And it's all kind of interwoven with this, bring our jobs back and made in America. It's very hard to find products that aren't made in China. And it was very concerning for me when I noticed the huge trade deficit that we had with China. And the other issue, which was incredible, was the amount of cheating that China has done by stealing our intellectual property from businesses here. And I've written about this extensively. Actually, I did an article in 2016 in CNN, published a piece I did with just some of the stats and figures on why we need to bring manufacturing back and start making things again in this country. So it was a big part of my work on the Financial Services Committee. We did a lot on the Council on Foreign Investment. That was part of the Financial Services Committee and holding China accountable, watching where they're investing in land and New York-based company or American-based companies to make sure that they weren't finding ways to steal our intellectual property. So a lot of those are, like, I think some real big issues that we dealt with that, you know, one, obviously everybody likes to get a tax cut. And, you know, we always were, as a New Yorker, I remember just being exasperated with, you know, the policies of New York State, where we would take literally hundreds of millions of taxpayer money and try to lure big businesses to come back or to come to our region. And that's my money and our money and the taxpayers' money. Let's make it fair by lowering taxes for everyone, by moving away unnecessary regulations, because we do need to regulate the environment, but unnecessary regulations that make it hard for small businesses, those types of things needed to be moved out of the way for smaller businesses so they could achieve and grow. And so a lot of those just are basic things, and you can see the number of people that we're hiring, getting people back to work. And then a third aspect of that, of something that was really important to me as part of the tax cuts and also part of getting people back to work, was retraining our workforce, because we have a tremendous workforce, but getting them retrained, because some of those jobs, you know, just are going to be modernized. We're going to put them into new types of skill sets. And there was an incentive for businesses to actually use their money, not take taxpayer money, but to use their own investment into employees with a system that we passed and we advocated for. I did that with Ivanka Trump. She came to our district to talk about that. And so this reinvestment was really an important component of that. And also just helping people get to work. I was a single mom. I raised my son. I'm so proud. He ended up, you know, getting lucky enough to be selected to go to the U.S. Naval Academy. He did extremely well there. He is now, he commissioned as a Marine. He's now a captain in the Marine Corps. But it was tough on me running my family business, caring for my parents who were in their final years. My father was very sick. He was in a wheelchair. He was going blind. My mother had other severe health problems. But I took care of him. I lived across the street. I live across the street from the house I grew up in right now. So helping my parents, now this is, they've already passed away, but I wanted to help these families who I know are struggling. A lot of parents who could use doubling the child care credit so that they could afford to go to work and still have their kids cared for at home in a safe way. As a mom, there's nothing makes you more nervous than where your kids are going to be taken care of while you're at work. Also, we had a dependent care credit for people who were taking care of their parents. A lot of these things were really personal and really made a difference I could see in the lives of people in my community who couldn't afford to do, to balance all these things. And so I would say those are some of our big accomplishments. I mean, there's so many things that we did. We helped our military. We brought historic resources to Rome Lab, which is a leader in cybersecurity. They're not just recognized nationally, they're recognized internationally for our work, which is going to be our future. My son was a computer science information technology major at the Naval Academy. He's definitely influenced me in how important our future is with dealing with the cyber world, and that's where we all are today. We're communicating this way now. So I think these are things that were really important that we did in Congress on the federal side. And then also having the compassion and care for people in our community who've been a little bit left behind, dealing with community service block grants. Those were cut off by the executive budget. I led with Tom Cole, Congressman Tom Cole, the nation, in bringing those back. And people say, well, what are community service block grants? Well, they help our community action agencies. I mean, it was exciting to be able to call each one of our community action agencies and saying, your funding has not only been restored, you're getting a 10% increase because we know that we've been hit pretty hard in our communities in upstate New York. On the community block grants, we were also able to bring those back. As a lawyer, I won an award from the Legal Aid Society for doing my pro bono work, and the executive budget zeroed out the Legal Services Corporation, which provides legal services to needy people. As a lawyer, there's nothing scarier than having to go into court against someone who's got a lawyer, especially if you don't have the skill set to defend and protect yourself. Those are foundational rights that we have as American citizens. We were able to get that funding restored through really aggressive advocacy, working with partners in the Senate. Constantly, every time I got a chance to see the president, I emphasized all of these issues. We need to do this. This is important. We have people that are in need of help. Another big issue was combating the opioid crisis. We brought historic funding to the opioid issue in our region, not just to help counseling, but to help our police and fire deal with some of the issues they deal with on the emergency basis. That was a big thing. It was a big part of it. We also brought a lot of historic relief for disaster. We have a lot of flooding issues in our community. Incidentally, it's a little odd, we're an inland community. I can get into flooding all day, but I'm not going to talk about that in this interview. But it is an important issue in our region, and we were able to get the FEMA money to a lot of these regions. In some cases, we're still battling to try to get it there. But these are issues. But I know that's a long answer, but there's a lot there.
That's okay. I want to get into some of those things that you mentioned. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with Claudia Tenney. She's a Republican challenging first-term Democrat Anthony Brindisi for Congress in New York's 22nd congressional district. Well, I want to explore some more specific things here in the second half of our conversation, and in just kind of a quick fashion, let me try to give some, mile markers or road signs for our listeners about kind of where you sit on some of the issues. And the first one is about the President Trump. You've obviously been a big supporter of his. I notice on your yard signs, his name is alongside yours. And so the question I had with this is, in terms of the issue positions and the policies that the president has pursued, are there any issue positions that you disagree with President Trump about? Any areas of disagreement between the two of you?
I think the truth about President Trump and what he actually believes in, I think is interesting. I wasn't originally a big supporter of the president because I really wasn't sure where he stood on the issues. When I see that the president went to office, and obviously he's a different a breed, you know, he's from New York City and he was in the New York City development field. But I find him to be a task completer, and he's someone who listens. And I'm going to give you just a really brief example. I happened to be at the Oval Office for the signing of a human trafficking bill, which was one of my signature issues in Albany when I served in the Assembly, was to fight this terrible scourge of human trafficking, which is incredibly happening in our country, which surprises people when you tell them about it. But the president really grasped that issue right away, and he was an immediate advocate for it. But while I was standing in the Oval Office, I was right next to the president. We got into the discussion, and he turned to me and said, "Claudia, what do we do about these DACA kids? I want to find a way to keep them here and make them legal and have that happen. What are the options?" And I happened to be standing, the other person standing next to me was Bob Goodlatte, who at the time was chairman of the Judiciary Committee. And we went over a number of options and bills. And I saw, you know, the president really is very practical. Like, he really wants to help these people. He wants to actually make them legal, and the ones who prove that they are interested in being Americans and taking the oath to be American citizens in a self-governing constitutional republic, he wants to make them into legal citizens. And I think that is a big surprise that a lot of people might not see. I mean, I've gotten to see the president close up. I've gotten to speak with him one-on-one. And certainly, you know, he says things that we all go, ugh, you know. I mean, I don't think even the most ardent Trump supporter doesn't, you know, cringe sometimes with the way he says things. But I really don't like to get hung up on what people say. I like to talk about what they do. And the president has proven that he is going to steadfastly stand up for American workers. He's going to stand up for the America around the world. And I think that that's among the things, the reasons I am a supporter of his. Plus, I was able to go with him on some of the things we highlighted earlier, whether it was the opioid issue, funding our legal services corporation and help for people in legal aid societies, helping with the community block grants that I talked about with the community action agencies, you know, the compassion that he showed me. His interest, and remember, we had a huge issue with the funding of the community health centers, which we have across the region for people who are needy. And we fought back to get actually an increase in funding for community health centers. And that was not simple advocacy. It was through numerous meetings with the president himself and with his team. And I find once you get to the president himself, that's when action occurs. I mean, I had a great example of meeting the president about Cheryl Manufacturing. You know, I conceived and came up with an idea called the Spoons Act, you know, support procurement of our nation's stainless steel, which was a nice, catchy, original title that my staff came up with. The president loved the idea, and he wanted to make sure that the all the federal agencies, including the White House and everyone, were using a Made in America flatware. And that's something that we advocated for. And the president did it. You know, it took a couple of tries, but we actually got that done. He wanted to make sure that he's living up to those promises to bring our jobs back, to support American workers. And I think he's very strong on a lot of those things. So in terms of like, you know, those were things that initially he didn't agree with me on. But I feel like advocacy to him directly and having a good relationship with him helped me to bring a lot of these resources to our community. I explained the Rome Lab situation to him. You know, a number of these issues, right down to small things. I had a woman.
Well, let me jump in ahead. Because I want to squeeze some other questions in. But let me flip this around and ask: are there any issues that you agree with the Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden on? Anything that you and Joe Biden see the same?
I'm not sure what Joe Biden really stands for. I know in the past, you know, he's kind of taken a different position. He said he was a moderate before, but now he's pretty much embraced the Bernie Sanders agenda. So I'm not really sure what his real positions are. I do know that, you know, one of the biggest issues in my region, and I've been going door to door for months, even before the primary, is that people are very, very concerned about their safety. And I have heard this, I've heard this from 30 or 40 different people, but it really hit home to me in Broome County on Sunday when I went to a door and a grandfather came to the door and he said, "Oh my God, I'm a huge supporter of yours. I'm a big supporter of President Trump. I have my grandchildren here at home during the day because my daughter works. My wife is in a wheelchair." And he said, "I'm afraid to put a Trump sign on my lawn because I don't want to be a target." And I think it's a little too late and too late that Joe Biden and especially Anthony Brindisi have finally come out and spoken out about what's going on in our communities. There is advocating for social justice, which is something I've done, you know, my whole life. I've worked pro bono for what, 16 years now, for a genuine Oneida Indian trying to save his land from being taken by the casino Indians. And this is land held by a treaty where he was born, his ancestors were born, whether it's doing the very first Black and Latino newspaper in the Syracuse market with a great guy named Ed Moss, who has since passed away, to doing the very first Bosnian newspaper in Bosnian. And as I told you, I mean, I've done a lot of these things because I care. I want to make sure that everyone's empowered. But to the violence and destruction of businesses and people's homes and the threats really do not, Brindisi has not said a word about it. And Joe Biden finally did say something about it a few days ago. But this kind of stuff is scaring a lot of people. And I think it scares me a little bit, too. I mean, I have had numerous death threats when I was in Congress. I get a lot of vile things. I've had stickers put on my signs. I've had, you know, mustaches and, you know, depicting Hitler put on some of my signs. Some vulgar, misogynistic language and things have been put on my signs throughout the region. And I mean, I hate to say this is par for the course, but this didn't happen to me before I ran for Congress. It only happens when you're in a high profile position. So
let me ask you a follow up about that. But first, let me just remind our listeners, if they just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, and my guest is Republican candidate for Congress, Claudia Tenney. So you're speaking about the protests and the issues surrounding the police conduct there. Let me just ask you one specific question related to that. Do you think, though, that in the United States, policing needs some kind of closer scrutiny than it's currently getting?
I don't know that it's not getting closer scrutiny, but I think we definitely need more resources to the police. We need to have them trained. I think you'll see a really interesting contrast with some of the cities across the country. Just look at some of the cities in our region. You're not seeing that type of violence because we have a very active, particularly the city of Utica, has a very active community policing operation. They work with our inner city communities. They really make an effort, and resources are put into that. I think so much of the divide in our country is really just education and having people understand how to do a better job. And I think there are, for the most part, most police do a very good job. And honestly, I'm a lawyer. I've dealt with police for many years in criminal. There are bad police officers. There's tremendous police officers as well. But right now, we're condemning all police over just a few. And the defund police movement, you know, that is coming out is really the wrong answer to making policing better. And I was very vocal about the fact that Anthony Brindisi voted to defund the police. He voted to take away their qualified immunity. He voted to support a national database to dox police without any due process before that, those names and incidents would be released without any proof. And now he's trying to walk it back because people realize, I mean, by an 80% margin, even in the inner cities, that yes, we have bad actors in the police department and they should be held accountable. They should be removed from their job or prosecuted in the case that they commit a crime. Those laws are already in place, but we need to make sure that, yes, we continue to be better. We're never going to be perfect.
Let me interject there because we've only got a couple minutes left, literally 2 minutes. So I want to squeeze a couple more questions in. I want to shift to a different topic. If you could very briefly evaluate President Trump's handling of the COVID-19 pandemic. That's obviously going to be a big issue on voters' minds this fall.
Well, in terms of New York, I think the president has done a tremendous job. He had answered every ask that Governor Cuomo asked. He said, I need hospital space. He brought the comfort ship in record time. They reappointed the Javits Center to be a hospital. They brought in the ventilators, all these things that ended up not really being used in the numbers they needed. And I think the president, I think, was between a rock and a hard place. He tried to do this in a federalist kind of way. He wanted to make sure that each state with their unique issues were given the opportunity to handle handle this problem based on their specific need. Now, had the president taken he put out a very comprehensive multiple page plan and for using this, and many of the states followed it, including New York and our region, phase one, all the different phases that came through. And there's constant claims that he didn't do any, there was no plan, but there's a very comprehensive plan that Vice President Pence actually was overseeing. And I worked with Vice President Pence. I'm a private citizen, but I was taking calls and helping farmers and small business owners and doing Zoom calls on getting their PPP loans, on doing so many things throughout this crisis. I think the president stood up. He allowed the states to do what they had to do. And I think that if anyone were to fault him, it would be because he allowed a lot of bad governors to make bad policy, including New York, where so many.
Let me jump in with one last question, yeah, if I can.
Okay.
And this is going to be almost like a lightning round. We're really at the end.
Sorry.
Here, it's okay. Should there be another round of economic stimulus, do you think? I know it's a more complicated question in terms of what it is, but just should there be another round of economic stimulus?
Yes, because so many businesses are still forced to be closed or to be at half capacity or to be in jeopardy of losing their livelihood and their businesses altogether. There does need to be more stimulus.
Okay, we'll have to leave it there for now. That was Claudia Tenney. Ms. Tenney, I just want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me. And I also want to wish good health to you and your family.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thank you for the great interview.
Thank you for making the time. You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, conversations in the public interest.
The Campbell Conversations, conversations in the public interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio, and edited by Jason Smith. Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. To learn more about the program or to hear previous interviews, visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations.